Good evening and welcome, and thank you for joining this telephone town hall. I'm Bill Boyce, the fire chief at the City of Brampton, and I'll be your moderator tonight. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 3 on your phone at any time. Tonight we're going to be hearing from a number of experts, including Rick Bernard, our emergency management coordinator, our mayor, Dr. Lowe, Dr. Martino, and tonight we're also going to kick it off with Rick Bernard, our manager of emergency management, giving an update. Rick.
Great. Thanks very much, Chief, and good evening, everyone. Just a couple updates on my end. The City of Brampton and the rest of the province continue to be in step one of the provincial reopening plan. This phase may change to step two by July 2nd or sooner if our encouraging trends of vaccination, lower case counts, and increased healthcare capacity continue in the right direction. We are still in a state of emergency under the Emergency Management and Civil Protection Act. I encourage you to follow all health protocols, even as we move to further open many amenities and services in our community in the near future. Our office continues to provide external support to the Region of Peel and provincial health partners to facilitate locations and logistics for testing sites and vaccination centers. Those continued testing sites through the city include the Brampton Lawn Bowling Facility, Terry Miller Rec Center, and Snell Grove Community Center. The other non-city facilities for testing in Brampton include the Peel Memorial Center, the Embassy Grand Convention Center, and My Health Testing Center. Our major vaccination centers in Brampton include Save Max Sports Center, Century Gardens Recreation Center, the CAA Center, Brampton Civic Hospital, 10 Peel by the Bramley City Center, and many of our pharmacies and primary care providers in our community. We do have a couple pop-up clinics running at the Embassy Grand Vaccination Center and at Sheridan College. Also, following the advice of Peel Public Health, the City of Brampton has updated and extended its COVID-19 mandatory face mask bylaw until September 30th of this year, which really means that we have to continue to wear face masks in all indoor public spaces. And lastly, our staff here at the City continue to meet regularly at our Emergency Operations Center to ensure that we continue to address any issues that have surfaced from this emergency and pandemic. And thank you, everyone, and stay safe.
Thank you, Rick. Also, tonight on the line, in addition to Mayor Brown, are the co-chairs of our task forces with the city, including our social support task force and Councillor Santos and Councillor Bowman, our senior support task force led by Councillor Fortini and Councillor Dillon, our Economic Support Task Force with Councillor Pelleschi and Councillor Vicente, our Youth Support Task Force with Councillor Williams and Councillor Singh, and from the Reopening and Recovery Working Group, we have Councillor Medeiros, and the Backyard Garden Program, Councillor Willens. And as I mentioned earlier, we have Dr. Lawrence Lowe, our Medical Officer of Health, joining us as always each week. Dr. Frank Martino from William Osler Health System, myself, Bill Boyce, the Fire Chief of the City of Brampton, our Chief of Paramedic Services from Peel Region, Peter Dundas, and Staff Superintendent Sean McKenna from Peel Regional Police. Also on the line is Paul Morrison from our bylaw team, our Director of Bylaw Enforcement, and our Chief Administrative Officer, David Barrick. So if you would like to ask a question tonight, please press star 3 on your phone at any time. We are going to have our updates from a number of the experts. I know council is going on concurrently, so the mayor is making himself available to give an update. So I'll turn it over to you, Mayor Brown.
Thank you, Chief Boyce, and welcome to our teletown hall, which we host every 3 weeks to keep you informed. I'm grateful for the fact that some of the most senior officials in the Region of Peel are on this call to be available to you, accessible, to answer your questions. From Dr. Frank Martino, one of the most senior physicians at Osler, Dr. Lawrence Lowe, who obviously has been spearheading the battle for us at Public Health, and our top EMS officials. A few things I wanted to share this week, and that's that we're making great progress, Brampton. I want to thank you for your sacrifice, abiding by the public health protocols. For the first time in the last year, we didn't have a single bylaw infraction. It means people understand the context we're in, and it's really been a team effort, everyone trying to do their part. And we're seeing that with the vaccination rates. We are at over 76% of Peel Region residents with their first vaccine dose, and we have over 25% of our residents who have now had their second dose. Now, to put that into context, we have now met the thresholds for stage three of the reopening. Now, the provincial government set a standard, you know, stage one, stage two, stage three. We're still in stage one, and we've already knocked out of the park our stage three vaccination targets. And vaccines pave the way to get back to normal. And the best indication of that is you look at the COVID numbers. Your work is paying off. We're seeing COVID numbers that are, frankly, as low as they were at the lowest point last summer, despite the fact we had a very difficult third wave, which meant it was even harder to get the numbers down. And so I'm very encouraged, and it's one of the reasons I've been encouraging the provincial government that we may be ready to have an earlier reopening. I certainly feel confident that some of the outdoor amenity restrictions can be lifted, and that some of the sectors that have been shuttered for a long time, like the personal care services sector, could be reopened. We're finally in a position where I think you're going to start to see Ontario catch up with other provinces around Canada and being able to get some of these sectors back on their feet. But it's only because of your contribution, of your sacrifice, the fact that so many people got vaccinated, so many people adhere to the public health advice. So I'm really optimistic. There are better days ahead, and it's because of you. Now, if you haven't got vaccinated or you have a friend who's showing vaccine hesitancy, please encourage them. The best way for us to get back to normal is to make sure that we're all protected. The only way we're going to get more challenges is if this virus can bounce around in the community between unvaccinated people. And so, we're almost there. We really are. We're almost there. This is like kilometer 41 of a 42-kilometer marathon. I am excited. We're on the verge of getting back to normal, being able to gather again together, be together again as a community. I did want to reference. I should also reference the fact that our hospital capacity is the best it's been in a long time. Only two people in the ICU at Brampton Civic. And remember, we had the busiest COVID hospital in the entire province, the busiest volumes of COVID patients. Now we only have two people in ICU. That is tremendous progress. Keep up the great work, Brampton. There are a lot of pop-up clinics that are still offering vaccines. We have the mass vaccination centers that are still operating very long hours. So make sure that if you have anyone you know that hasn't got their vaccine, point them in the direction of Peel Public Health or Osler. And the last thing I wanted to mention is I get a lot of questions, people asking me, you know, is it okay to mix or interchange vaccines? And let me give you my own example. I got AstraZeneca as my first vaccine, but I got Pfizer as my second. I know Dr. Lowe got Moderna as his second. And really, these are great scientific accomplishments. These vaccines protect you, your friends, your family, your neighborhood. So don't worry about which vaccine you get in terms of Pfizer or Moderna. They're both very, very effective, and they will protect you against COVID-19. And so I just wanted to add that context. I have heard this advice from the best doctors in our hospital, the best doctors in Peel Public Health, and I share that advice to you because I trust our physicians. I trust our public health officials, and I interchange vaccines myself. If I had any hesitancy or any doubt about their advice, then I wouldn't be doing it myself. But I did because I believe in the science. I believe in our medical advice, and I would encourage everyone to enthusiastically take their advice as well. So on that note, Bill, I'm looking forward to the questions tonight, and thank you once again for everyone to coming on the call.
Thank you very much, Mayor Brown. As you know, if you've listened before, each week we do a number of polling questions, and we have three again tonight, so we would like your feedback. It does really help us inform how we move forward as a city with our COVID response. And tonight's first question, do you support reopening hair and beauty salons and nail parlors at the earliest with safety measures in place consistent with other Canadian provinces? Press 1 for yes, press 2 for no. Again, the question, do you support reopening hair and beauty salons and nail parlors at the earliest with safety measures in place consistent with other Canadian provinces? Press 1 for yes and press 2 for no. So we'll come back to those results in a few moments, but I would like to remind anybody on the call tonight, if you'd like to ask a question, to please press star 3 on your phone at any time. And with that, we will go to our next update, which comes from Dr. Lawrence Lowe, the Medical Officer of Health with the Region of Peel. Dr. Lowe.
Thanks, Chief Boys. Thanks. Good evening, Mayor Brown, councillors and colleagues, and also City of Brampton. It's a pleasure to be here on another Brampton Town Hall in respect to the COVID response. I will say that I'm hopeful that we are starting to see very favorable trends that portend an exit from the acute phase of the pandemic in our community and throughout the region of Peel. As of the previous week, Brampton's incidence rate for COVID was 24.5 cases per 100,000, with a test positivity of approximately 3%. And so these are really favorable numbers that really reflect the sacrifices of the community in hearing and complying with the disease control measures that came into play with the stay-at-home order at the beginning of April. That really drove our cases down through May. And then subsequently, you know, gratitude and thanks to the community for really showing up and getting vaccinated, which has helped to drive cases even further down throughout the month of June. You know, I think it's very favorable, but we do know that we must remain cautious and vigilant with the Delta variant in our midst. The B.1.617 variant, originally first identified in the Indian subcontinent, continues to grow in proportion. And even though it doesn't make it is a proportion of a small number of cases on a day-to-day basis right now, we do know that with increased interaction and contact, there is a possibility of greater transmission, particularly as this variant does appear to render single dose protection somewhat partially ineffective. So it is really vital that we actually are looking to other countries that are ahead of us on the vaccine and pandemic curve, the United Kingdom, Israel. All of these countries are highly vaccinated, but they have recently, as they have moved towards, you know, broader and broader reopening, have started to see resurgences of case, not only cases, because if it was just cases, it wouldn't be as much of a concern, but also of hospitalizations, particularly amongst people that are unvaccinated. And so it's absolutely vital for me to deliver that message tonight to make it very clear. We now have, you know, a significant amount of vaccine that is available in our community. We have ramped up our mass vaccination program to be able to deliver 150,000 doses a week across the region. That is in concert together with our hospital partners at William Osler, who have been beside us throughout this entire pandemic, as well as numerous community agency partners. And really thanks to the dedication of all the frontline workers in our immunization clinics that have been serving to make sure that we get this vital protection out to everyone in our community. And so I really encourage you to avail yourself of the opportunity to get vaccinated. We do know that for those of you who haven't received a first dose yet, one dose is nearly 99% effective at preventing severe disease, hospitalization, and mortality. And so it is really encouraged to get that. Most of the surge that has been seen in other countries has been amongst unvaccinated populations. And those who have been vaccinated and subsequently developed disease oftentimes have mild symptoms and nothing that is life-threatening. So it can't be understated that even though one dose is only partially effective against the Delta variant for overall infection, it is still very effective against severe presentations and mortality. And that speaks, though, to the other piece, which is really when we're looking at trying to get down transmission overall, we're trying to get to two-dose coverage as quickly as possible in our community. And the National Advisory Committee on Immunization, our federal body in respect of vaccine guidance, is very clear that mRNA is mRNA. Both Pfizer and Moderna use the similar mRNA technology to provide you with protection. The labels may be somewhat different, but it is the same immune system, your immune system, that is getting primed by a first dose and then boosted by a second dose. And the NACI is very clear. If you get mRNA for your first dose of either Pfizer or Moderna, you can get either Pfizer or Moderna for your second dose. And if you got AstraZeneca for your first dose, either of those vaccines will work for dose two if you haven't already gotten a second dose of AstraZeneca. So it's really vital to say at this point in the pandemic, where we are really trying to get ahead of the Delta variant, where we are trying to continue to assure our reopening and our, you know, ensuring that this is really the last reopening, the more vaccine protection we get, the better. We certainly are already seeing, and you know, really, I'm really grateful that our community has shown up in significant numbers. We're now 76% first dose covered, 18 plus in the region of Peel. We are also 58% rather, first dose covered amongst our 12 to 17 population in the region of Peel. And we are earlier this week, as of today, hitting 25% second dose coverage. And we are adding 10% second dose coverage every week at this point in time. So it really is important. As we get to that second dose coverage, that is how we reassure that we will not go backwards, that we will finally exit the acute phase of the pandemic, and that hopefully many of these things, town halls, press briefings, even my own engagement with the response will hopefully be soon distant memories. But it really takes all of us together working collectively to get whatever vaccine as a second dose is available. And I say this because it's really vital to also highlight that we've, our supply, our vaccine supply has been improving since the start of our campaign, but remains very volatile. We saw, for example, in February, shipment delays with the Pfizer vaccine owing to production retooling. Throughout March and April, we dealt with production delays of Moderna, which is why many people received Pfizer as a first dose. And then just recently today, this week, and then coming in July, we're anticipating further reductions and delays in the shipment of Pfizer. So we're very fortunate in Canada that we have different companies that are sending us really effective vaccines that can be used and that can be used almost just in time. It seems like they've been trading off delays in a way. But it is vital for us to recognize that whatever we have on hand, whatever we can get out as quickly as possible, that's how we get a broad two-dose coverage quickly that will all but assure our reopening and our exit. So, I mean, I myself, as Mayor Brown identified, I got Moderna. I've got, both doses of Moderna, but I do know that my family and friends have also received any number of combinations. I've had Moderna Pfizer's, Pfizer Moderna's, AstraZeneca's, Pfizer's, AstraZeneca Moderna. All those family and friends are now benefiting from two valid doses and protection and have done their part to help our community and all of our and our country. So I really want to encourage you. You know, and the analogy I use is, you know, if you're on a if you're on an island that is sinking, you're not going to say, well, I'm going to keep my original ticket and fly out a few weeks from now. You're going to take the first seat on whatever flight out that you might have, even if it's not your favorite airline. And this is the same thing. mRNA is mRNA, and the sooner we get to broad second dose coverage, the sooner we can really put the acute phase of the pandemic behind us. So the numbers look good. Our vaccine coverage continues to grow. And I know the resilience and the collective efforts of this community are what will see us through what really is and starting to feel like the final stage of this pandemic. So with that, I will thank you all. Look forward to the questions and discussion. I'll pass it back to you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe. For the next update, I will go to Dr. Frank Martino from William Osler Health System. Welcome back, Dr. Martino.
Thank you, Chief, and it's nice to be back. And good evening, everyone. I hope you're all staying well and safe. I'm pleased to be here this evening on behalf of Dr. Naveed Mohammed, who sends his regrets. I've sat in for Dr. Mohammed a number of times before, so it's great to be back amongst this group of dedicated community leaders again. Now more than 15 months into the pandemic, it appears we've been turning the corner on the third wave, as Dr. Lowe has alluded to. While Osler continues to provide care to a number of COVID-19 patients, I'm pleased to share that over the past number of weeks, we've seen fewer patients with COVID-19 arrive at our hospital emergency departments. We're also no longer transferring COVID-19 patients to other hospitals as was necessary earlier during the stages of the pandemic. Currently, there are 22 COVID-19 patients in our hospitals. 15 of these are at Brampton Civic, and 7 of these patients are receiving care in the Brampton Civic ICU. And I know that Mayor Brown indicated that there are 2, but there are patients that we call long-stay COVID patients. They are no longer infectious, but they are recovering in our ICU from complications of the COVID infection. Our healthcare teams are continuing to ensure that every patient who comes through our doors receives compassionate, high-quality care. And as we look ahead to brighter days, I'm also proud that OSLR continues to play a significant role in COVID-19 vaccinations. In fact, OSLR recently reached the milestone of administering more than 221,000 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine since opening our first clinic back in December of 2020. I'd like to thank OSLR's dedicated and hardworking vaccination team, along with our community partners, for all of their hard work and efforts to make the COVID-19 vaccination accessible to the community. I can't begin to stop echoing Dr. Lowe's comments. Our journey out of this pandemic is going to be all about vaccination. So if you have experienced questions and some hesitancy about getting your vaccine, contact your family doctor. They are an excellent resource to answer those questions and provide you answers that may help you in managing that hesitancy, and hopefully you will get the vaccine as soon as possible. Just yesterday, OSLR also held a one-day medical complex COVID-19 vaccine clinic at Brampton Civic Hospital for youth age 12 to 17. Clinics like these are important to ensure that those who are particularly vulnerable in our community have ease of access to the vaccine in a comfortable and safe environment. With new COVID-19 cases, hospitalizations, and ICU admissions continuing to decline across the province, Ontario hospitals are now beginning to carefully and gradually resume some elective, non-emergent, and non-urgent surgeries and procedures. OSLR is implementing a phased recovery plan to safely resume some services like remaining flexible and able to scale back in the event of, let's God forbid, an additional wave of COVID-19. As we all know, Brampton has been one of the hardest hit areas throughout the pandemic, and this will impact how quickly we can resume hospital services. But please be assured, we're going to do our best to ensure we get back to the normal that we all are accustomed to as soon as possible. I know there continues to be much interest in hospital expansion plans, so I'd like to mention Peel Phase 2 today in my update, and this is the redevelopment of Peel Memorial Centre for Integrated Health and Wellness. We're now in what is known as the functional programming stage, which involves more detailed planning of the clinical programs that will be housed in the expanded hospital, including the staffing, equipment, space, and other requirements needed to support patient services. This work will continue over the upcoming months, and we will engage patients and families as well as the general community to help shape what Peel Phase 2 will become. As our community and province continues to see COVID infections decrease, I want to recognize and thank the community for getting vaccinated and following public health measures. While we're still a way to go to get over this pandemic, I know we can do it together and work towards a healthier future for our community. OSLR's healthcare teams remain grateful for the support that they've received over the months, and I personally, and along with members of the senior leadership team, want to thank you. I look forward to taking your questions later in the course of the evening. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Martino. And I do believe council's got a short break, so I want to make sure our councillors get an opportunity to provide their updates now. And from the Social Support Task Force, we have Councillor Santos on the line to give an update. Councillor Santos?
Hi, good evening, everyone. It's Councillor Rowena Santos here from Wards 1 and 5 in Brampton. And thank you so much for accommodating our schedule today. It's a long council meeting. But I'm happy to provide an update from the Social Support Task Force. Now, so for over 65 weeks, we've been working with our four anchor food distributors, Knight's Table, Regeneration, United Sikhs, and CALSA Aid, to provide food and resources to so many of those in need. As this pandemic evolved, many organizations that were previously not involved in food distribution stepped up into the role to help our communities. If you are a new food distributor, please get in touch with us. Or if you know a food distributor, please get in touch with us. We would love to connect you to the larger Brampton Food Network. And thanks to all of the anchor organizations, volunteers, and distributors who continue after over a year to give back to our community. Regarding homelessness, we continue to collaborate with our partners at the Region of Peel, Peel Outreach, and internally with our city security services and bylaw teams to respond to encampments with the goal of connecting individuals to housing services and other resources and supports that they may need. You may start to see over, as the weather gets warmer, more encampment sites that pop out up through our parks as well as along our trails. So if you do notice an encampment in a park, please call 311. If you know someone that is experiencing homelessness and requires a warm place to stay the night, please call 1-877-848-8481. 1-877-848-8481. And finally, if you are on the phone and you're looking to help out, our anchor food distributors are in need of diapers, cereal, canned meat, pasta sauce, and oil. Please visit our social support task force webpage for the complete list of high demand items and for more information on how and where to safely donate. If you or someone you know has questions about our task force, please visit our website or call 311. Thank you so much, Chief, and back to you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Santos. And I know the rest of Council will be joining as soon as they get an opportunity with the end of Council today. Just want to remind everybody, if you'd like to ask a question of any of the experts on the line tonight, to please press star 3 on your phone. We are going to go right to 8 p.m. And just in addition to, we also have Anand Patel, our Director of Recreation, on the line with us tonight if there's any questions related to the city's recreation programs. And before we go to the first question, I just want to show the results of the poll, which says, do you support reopening hair, beauty, and nail salons at the earliest possible time with safety measures in place consistent with other Canadian provinces? And 87% overwhelmingly agreed with that, with 13% saying no. So with that, we're going to go now to our first question of the evening, which comes from Leah. Leah, if you're there, go ahead with your question, please.
Hi.
Hi, Leah. Hello. Go ahead, please.
Hi. My question is, I guess it's just a medical type of question. What's the medical guidance for gathering of fully vaccinated adults? Can they safely get together outdoors in a group and with no masking, no physical distancing? And how does that guidance change if those adults will be interacting with unvaccinated children at their homes?
Thank you very much, Leah, for the great question. And I will start with Dr. Lowe, our Medical Officer of Health. Dr. Lowe.
Thanks, Leah, for the question. Thanks, Chief Boys. At this time, the provincial government has indicated that they are awaiting federal Public Health Agency of Canada to provide guidance for fully vaccinated adults. I think there is a recognition, as was mentioned, around the Delta variant. In my opening remarks, I neglected to mention that we do really want to also try to continue to gradually emerge from the acute phase of the pandemic. Now is the time to perhaps reconnect with some close family and friends in person, but really to try to do it outdoors and where possible to still maintain distancing and masking. Just recognizing that we have high one-dose coverage, but we don't have high two-dose coverage quite just yet. My understanding is that as our two-dose coverage grows, that our federal partners will be releasing guidance, which will then be translated at the provincial level here in Ontario. But as of this time, we don't have any guidance from we don't have anything specific that has changed in respect of immunization status from the provincial government, though we are certainly, as you, very anxious and excited to see what any potential guidance might contain. Thanks. I'll pass it back to you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe, and thank you, Leah, for the question. Our second question tonight comes from Sebastian. Sebastian, if you're there, please go ahead with your question.
Yes, my name is Sebastian Glodden. My wife and I are seniors. We received the Pfizer boat vaccine, but she has a complication with her knee, and she is on the standby for surgery. Will you be able to give me some information as how soon or when you will open up again for surgery?
Thank you, Sebastian, for the question. We do have Dr. Martino on from William Osler Health System, and I'll pass it over to Dr. Martino.
Thank you, Sebastian, and I'm pleased that someone did ask this question this evening, or this type of question. I think we all know that due to the unprecedented number of COVID-19 patients and the high ICU occupancy rates during the third wave of the pandemic, all hospitals across Ontario were directed to temporarily close or shut down elective surgeries and procedures and focus only on emergent and urgent activity. And Osler was one of those hospitals, and Ontario Health more recently has gone ahead and carefully advised us to carefully and gradually resume some elective and non-urgent, non-emergent surgeries and procedures. We've put into place a recovery plan that will allow the organization to safely resume some surgeries across all three of our hospital sites while remaining flexible and able to scale back in the event of an additional wave of COVID-19. Our surgical colleagues and our nursing colleagues have all been repatriated to their home units, and we're in the process now of revamping those services and recovering a lot of our elective work. Our hope is that by the fall, by September, we'll be back at close to, if not at, 100% of our activity. Through the course of the summer, we will gradually reopen a number of surgical programs and ramp up the activity within those programs. So, Sebastian, my hope is that your wife will have her knee surgery rescheduled for sometime in the near future. We know that total joint replacements and surgeries like cataract surgery have long wait lists. These wait lists have been exacerbated by the pandemic. Our aim at Osler is to work diligently to get those patients into the OR and have their procedures done as soon as possible.
Thank you very much, Dr. Martino and Sebastian, for the question. Our next caller is Doreen. Doreen, if you're there, please go ahead with your question.
Good evening, Mayor Brown and the panel. I'm grateful for this town hall meeting, which is very informative. My question is, what I've learned that if you got your vaccination at the hospital, both, you'll receive a receipt with a watermark that proved that you've had that vaccination. I had mine at Soccer Center and the pharmacy. So how do I go about getting that receipt to prove that I have had my vaccination?
Well, thank you, Doreen, for the question. And maybe Dr. Lowe could touch on that process if he has any information.
Yeah, thanks, Chief Boys. So, Doreen, when you signed up for your vaccination, you should have used or you may have used an email address to obtain it. If someone else helped you out in signing you up, they may have used their email address. All proofs of vaccination are emailed to you following 15 minutes after your injection has occurred. So if you don't have access to that email, if someone helped you out, I encourage you to ask them to check their email to see if they received your proof of vaccination. And if you don't have it, you can call 905-791-5202. And they can try to resend that to you. You can also, if need be, and on their advice, if you don't have access to email, you can present at any vaccination center and receive a printed copy of your vaccination proof. That is also offered to people who don't have email addresses when they show up at the clinic, and they're usually provided with a printed receipt upon departure. Thanks for the question. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe. Thank you for the question. Our next question comes from Maria. Maria, if you're there, please go ahead with your question.
Yes, I am here. Good evening, everybody. The reason for my call is because, first of all, I am very happy to hear that the members of the panel that are in your place, they didn't have no reaction receiving one vaccine in the first time and then another type of vaccine on the second time. Because 100% of all family and friends of mine who have received two different types of vaccine, the recuperation, it has been very, very hard. Now, I am in the position to go for the second one, and I have been to two different places, and they offer me a second one. And I don't want to get sick like how they got it. What solution do you give me, please?
Thank you, Maria, for the question. And I know maybe Dr. Lowe could touch on how people are reacting with the different doses that they may take if they're a different second dose, and maybe provide some feedback on that.
Thanks, Chief Boyes, and thanks, Maria, for the question. Let me just be very clear. Side effects are a good thing, right? Side effects show that your body and your immune system is priming itself to fight off essentially the virus's material, the genetic material of the virus that has been injected, so that one day if you are exposed to COVID-19, your immune system has seen it before and knows how to deal with it. And much of the reason why we've seen severe presentations and death from COVID-19 is because this new virus, when it actually gets into our body's immune system has no idea how to deal with it and subsequently overreacts with a very significant immune reaction that results in people needing supportive and then intensive care in very severe instances. So side effects are a good thing. And side effects are also not something that can be predicted by dose. I have had people who told me, oh, the first dose was terrible, knocked me on my back. Second dose was great. I've had people who've said it the other way around. I've had people who've had side effects with both doses, and I've had people who basically had both doses and didn't even notice anything. So I think it's really vital to remember that side effects suggest that your body is reacting in the way that it is intended. There is a suggestion as well that it is a lot better than actually getting COVID-19, where you're essentially spinning the dice and seeing how your immune system will react. And given that you have one dose on board already, two doses really will seal the deal. It is safe, effective. You may have mild side effects, but we know with the Delta variant that the possibility of you getting sick is somewhat increased because the one dose is only partially effective at preventing infection at 33% to 50%. So I hope that encourages you to get your second dose. For what it's worth, after my first dose, I had 3 days of a really sore arm. After my second dose, I had 1 day of a sore arm. My experience may not be your experience, though, but the reality is that any side effect is simply your body reacting so that one day if you are exposed to COVID-19, it knows what to do. Thanks. I'll pass it back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Maria, for the question, and Dr. Lowe for the detailed response. Our next question tonight and our next caller is Indy. Indy, if you're there, please go ahead with your question.
Hi. Good evening. This question is for Mayor Patrick Brown or any of the other councillor. I would like to know if you have any plans to offer the free fitness classes at the soccer center.
Well, thank you, Indy, for the question.
Thank you, Indy. I believe Anand Patel from our recreation department is on the call, and he can speak specifically about the fitness classes. I know we've got some outdoor fitness being offered, and know that as soon as we're permitted to have indoor fitness, there'll be no lag time. There'll be no delay. We'll have it up and running as soon as the province allows it. But Anand, if you could speak to the outdoor fitness that is being offered.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mayor Brown. So we actually do offer outdoor fitness classes free of charge. I think Indy is referring to those. Location-wise, because the soccer center is a vaccination site, we've avoided having classes there on site. Should that change, then the soccer center definitely is a great location for us to offer fitness classes. So we will look into it. As far as indoor goes, how it's slated right now, indoor classes would be permitted under Step 3. So we're still a ways away from that. But for the outdoor free classes, you can go on to www.brampton.ca/recreation, and there's a whole list of classes offered morning, afternoon, and evening, free of charge across the city. So thank you.
Thank you, Indy and Anand, for responding. We'll go to one more question now before we do our second poll of the evening, and that question goes to Pat. Pat, if you're there, please go ahead.
Oh, good evening. My question is for Dr. Lowe and Dr. Martino. I have a teenage daughter, and she had one dose of the Pfizer, And there's been some news lately about myocarditis being, I guess, a problem or an issue with young people, like teenagers and people under the age of 30. And I also heard on the news today one of your colleagues, Dr. Shakari, saying that it could be because of their robust immune system that they may be having this issue, and that possibly they need to get their second dose within 8 weeks instead of 4 weeks, like a longer period of time. So I'm kind of concerned about the Delta variant, and just wondering if I should wait 8 weeks for her to have her second dose or wait till they have more information about this myocarditis.
Thank you very much, Pat, for the question, and maybe I'll turn it over to the doctors and let them choose who would like to go first.
I can answer, Chief, and Dr. Martino, feel free to weigh in afterwards. But so, Pat, thanks for your question. At this point in time, the Ministry of Health has indicated that the 8-week interval is to be maintained in respect of teen vaccination. That's for people under the age of 18. So Peel Public Health will be respecting that interval, as the Ministry of Health has directed. In respect of the myocarditis pericarditis question, this is a safety signal that is currently being investigated. It's important to note that it has not been causally linked to the vaccine at this point in time. And in addition to that, most of the cases that have been reported have been mild, have resolved with conservative treatment, and typically have impacted men, young males, after their second dose. So it's really vital to highlight all those pieces, and that this is a signal following immunization that has not yet been causally linked to the vaccine. Of course, our federal government, the National Advisory Committee of Immunization, continues to monitor all the safety data. If anything, the detection of this signal really reflects the overall commitment to ensuring that the vaccines in Canada that are used are both effective and safe. And certainly if there's any change in guidance, either at the federal level or in direction from the Ministry of Health, we will act appropriately. We do know that youth in general have milder presentations, so concerns around the Delta variant and adhering to the 8-week interval should give you at least some reassurance, at least in respect of the protection that your child will enjoy. And I think the other more important thing to highlight is that one dose is already fairly protective, even if it's not fully protective against the Delta variant. And I think you've certainly done your part, and your daughter have done your part in helping to achieve our overall goal of collective protection for our community and aiming to reduce transmission and risk to all of us. Thank you very much, and I'll pass it back to the Chief.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe, and thank you to the caller for the question. Right now, we're going to go to Bertha. Bertha, if you're there, please go ahead with your question.
Very much for taking my question. My question this evening is for Dr. Martino. Currently, I am essential care support for my husband in Brampton Civic Hospital, and I wondered if there is any conversation right now around opening up visitation to patients by perhaps family members that have been fully vaccinated. Is there any talk about that happening yet, or is it still too early for that?
I'm happy you've asked that question. In fact, we are discussing this as you speak over the last week as the infectivity and the prevalence of COVID in the community has decreased, and as well as the number of individuals that have at least received their first dose and now a growing number of individuals receiving their second dose. Our hope is to open up visitation. At present, we have limited visitation to care providers that have been defined as important care providers in the in patients that have complex conditions that have been admitted to hospital, and certainly at end of life, visitation has been much more liberal as well. My hope is that we will be able to announce something in the week to come. And days to come about a more liberal visitation policy, which will allow
the presence of those loved ones with their family members that have been admitted to hospital with illness. We recognize the importance of having family at the bedside. We know that they are essential to the person's recovery. And at the same time, we need to weigh the dangers to others within the hospital facility, both patients and staff. And we want to make sure that the risk and the benefits can be weighed, and that the decision that is made is in the best interest of the patient, their family member that is visiting, and those within the hospital, staff and physicians.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Martino and Bertha, for the question. Just like to remind everybody that's listening that if you'd like to ask a question of anyone on the line, any of the experts tonight, please press star 3 on your phone at any time. That's star 3. Now we're going to go to our second poll of the evening, and the question tonight is, how many doses of COVID-19 vaccine have you taken so far? Press 1 for one dose, press 2 for two doses, and press 3 for none. The question again, how many doses of the COVID-19 vaccine have you taken so far? Press 1 for one dose, press 2 for two doses, and press 3 for none. We'll come back to those results in a few moments, and we'll go now to our next caller, which is Jane. Jane, if you're there, please go ahead with your question.
Hello. My name is actually Jean, and my question is, my husband and I are returning snowbirds that are Canadian Ontario Peel Region residents with fully vaccinated both doses from the United States. I would like to know how we can register our vaccinations as part of the percentages helping and assisting with the reopening of the province's step 2. I have taken a look at the Peel Health Organization website, but however, there is nothing available there for us to register. We are one of a number of people that have returned from various countries fully vaccinated. Please advise.
Thank you, Jean, for the question. My apologies on the name mistake, but I'll pass that over to Dr. Lowe. Dr. Lowe?
Jean, thank you so much, first of all, for coming back fully vaccinated and doing your part to get to collective protection in our community. It is on our website. I'll just read off the section that it's at. If you go to peelregion.ca/coronavirus/vaccine/book-appointment, you will get to a section where it says book your appointment. Unfortunately, it's probably not located in the best area. I'm happy to take that feedback to the team and to see if there's a way to remove the thing. But you actually have to click on, under the book your appointment section, you have to click on Peel Public Health Vaccine Clinics. And underneath there is wording that states vaccine doses received in Ontario. If you received your first COVID-19 vaccine dose outside of Ontario and you want your second dose booked at a Peel Public Health Clinic, please call the Region of Peel's COVID-19 vaccination line at 905-791-5202. So that's for people that have received their first dose out of Ontario. And it says if a second or both doses were received outside of Ontario, it says at this time, you don't need to report proof of a second dose or both doses reported received outside of Ontario to Peel Public Health. Hold on to your COVID-19 vaccine records for now in case you need to report them in the future. My understanding is that we are working on a process that will allow you to report your doses, and I encourage you to continue checking our website for updates when that comes available. I imagine it will also go out with quite a bit of fanfare, press release, and all that other stuff when it does happen. So either way, you can always call the Peel Region's vaccination line, 905-791-5202. If you want to, it doesn't sound like you'll need it in your situation, but that's also another place for you to check in every so often if you'd like to report. And I'm really grateful for your interest and willingness to report on your doses, and I'll definitely check with my team whether we can update that website. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Jean and Dr. Lowe. Our next question comes from Juanita. Juanita, if you're there, please go ahead.
Hi there. What's your opinion in regards to those who caught the new Delta variant in spite of receiving their COVID vaccine?
Okay, thank you, Juanita. And I know Dr. Lowe would be able to respond to this. Dr. Lowe.
Thanks, Chief. Thanks, Juanita. You know, certainly if you received, if a resident were to be diagnosed positive with the COVID, whether it's the Delta variant or otherwise, there is case management and contact tracing that occurs. In the course of that, we do ask about vaccination status and try to determine if the infection may have occurred during the two-week period after the dose, which would suggest that the immune system was still ramping up, or after the two-week period. All that information is then analyzed both here at Peel as well as at the provincial level to continue to monitor vaccine effectiveness. And I know Public Health Ontario have a report out on first doses. If you look up Public Health Ontario vaccine effectiveness in Google, you'll probably get pointed to it quite quickly. That shows that out of millions of doses that have been delivered to Ontario, there have been thousands, which really on a relative scale represents handfuls that might have contracted COVID, many of whom contracted COVID within the 2 week period that their vaccine protection was ramping up. So I encourage everyone, if you do come down with COVID-19, please work with our case management and contact tracing team, and please also disclose if you have been vaccinated. That's really important for our vaccine effectiveness and tracking purposes. Thanks very much for the question.
Great information. Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe and Juanita, for the question. Our next question comes from Heather. Heather, if you're there, please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. I'd like to thank the panelists for taking the time to have these calls and for answering my question. Just wondering if you could clear up some information for my husband and I. So we have a 13-year-old son who has had his first vaccination. We're looking at getting a second vaccination, but my husband heard on CP24 that the gap between the first and second vaccination is 28 days, but on the Region of Peel website, it said 8 weeks for the 12 to 17-year age group. So I'm wondering if you could just set the record straight on what the proper gap is between first and second shots for 12 to 17-year-olds.
I'm sure we can. Thank you very much, Heather, and I'll pass it to Dr. Lowe.
Thanks, Chief Boyd. Thanks, Heather, for the question. As I mentioned to the previous caller, the Ministry of Health has directed that there be an 8-week interval between first and second doses for people under the age of 18, and Peel Public Health will be respecting that interval as per ministry direction. Thanks. I'll pass it back to you, Chief.
Okay, great. Thanks, Dr. Lowe and Heather, for the question. Our next question comes from Glenn. Glenn, if you're there, please go ahead with your question.
Thank you for taking my question. I have read and heard many expert opinions offered in support of mixing vaccines. But what I'd like to know is, are there any published peer-reviewed studies that demonstrate the effectiveness and safety of mixing vaccines?
Okay, thank you. And I know both of our doctors could probably weigh in, but we can start with Dr. Lowe.
Yeah, thanks so much for the question. This is based on data that looks at the data that has been submitted for both Pfizer and Moderna in respect of their approvals, and also looking at the composition and the makeup of the actual vaccine product itself. They are both essentially bioidentical in their mechanism, biosimilar rather, and they have similar side effect profiles and effectiveness. We also know, based on vaccinology principles, that it is really about how the immune system reacts to a dose of any immunizing agent, rather than in respect of a brand name. As we know, our bodies don't recognize brand names. Our immune systems don't say, oh, this is Pfizer. It just says this is an RNA particle. So it is on the basis of the received data for both vaccines and understanding of those vaccine products and fundamentals of vaccinology that the interchangeability argument has been put forward, and it is important to note that speaks to the mRNA interchangeability question. In respect of AstraZeneca plus mRNA, there is evidence of effectiveness, and that is based on European study data that has come out of the United Kingdom, Germany, and Spain. So, these are new vaccines, but we do have, thankfully, fundamentals of science and vaccinology to continue to guide us, even as our context continues to evolve. And I do continue to encourage everyone to get to two doses as quickly as possible in any combination to ensure that your immune system has both the prime and boost, regardless of which immunizing agent is provided. Thanks. I'll pass it back to you, Chief, or to Dr. Martino, if he wants to add anything.
Thanks, Dr. Lowe. Dr.
No.
Anything to add?
No, I think that Dr. Lowe made some very good points. I think people should recognize that vaccine science has been in play for a long time, for decades, and that, you know, Health Canada, the CDC, and FDA have looked at these vaccines very closely. They are most, and if not all, based on producing the spike protein immunogenicity, so as the immune system is primed to fend off the infection by recognizing that protein. And they do it in various ways. And then often, when you use more than one different type of vaccine, you are addressing the immune system in different areas and priming it in more than one fashion to fend off infection, which in a way is excellent. It's actually what we want to do. Someone who's had natural infection and then gets the vaccine has both natural immunity and immunity generated by the vaccine. That person has multiple arms of the immune system primed if they were to encounter the pathogen again, in this case, the coronavirus. So I know there's a lot of fear out there concern and because many feel that this is a new and unseen virus, and it is scary. But the science of virology and immunology has been with us for many, many generations, and we've studied it to a significant degree to feel very comfortable about making these recommendations. There's now some real-world data as well that is going to evolve over the coming months. And there will be other vaccines that will come onto the market that will use other methods of delivering that immunogenicity to your system to get your body primed. And I think that I'm very confident that mixing the vaccines is not something that we should be concerned about. In fact, it may be something that is very beneficial.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe and Dr. Martino and Glenn for the question. Our next question comes from Purna. Purna, if you're there, please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and thank you very much for the city and doctors of Peel Region and City of Brampton for the way they have handled the pandemic so far. I have a question regarding smaller children. So kids 12 years and older are getting vaccinated. There's talk about school starting in September. How do we send our kids younger than 12 back to school? Is there some kind of a plan for them? Will they be vaccinated eventually? What's going to happen?
Okay, thank you very much, Purna, for the question. And maybe, Dr. Lowe, if you have any information on potential vaccinations of children under 12 or anything related to that question, be appreciated.
Yeah, thanks, Chief, and thanks, Putnam, for the question. So there's two questions here. In respect of children under 12, the current clinical trials are still in progress. My understanding is that they're supposed to be complete sometime this summer. And then, of course, you know, Health Canada, along with other regulatory agencies around the world, will likely review the data. And should it be deemed to be safe and effective in children under 12, give their stamp of approval for these products to be used. Both Moderna and Pfizer, as I understand it, are running trials. I'm not sure. I have to believe that the other vaccine manufacturers are as well. So hopefully we will get answers into that, and hopefully data that will allow us to go on in respect of the best use and the means by which we can vaccinate this population to really try to get to broad population coverage, because even right now 12 plus still excludes almost I think 200,000 or so individuals in our community. Which we know that the virus continues to transmit in pockets of unvaccinated people and pose a threat that way. Your second question really pertains to school reopening, and a lot of this is going to depend on trends, transmission, vaccine coverage, and our understanding of the evolution of any variants. There isn't any resurgence. Hopefully the vaccine tamps that down or really keeps it to just cases rather than hospitalizations and mortality. So there's a lot of factors that are still in play that determine what school is going to look like in September. And it's a topic of active discussion amongst several provincial ministries, as you can imagine, as well as our health unit and our school board partners. So I unfortunately don't have any further information to share at this point in time because it's still actively being monitored in the midst of our ongoing mass vaccination efforts. So all I can say is stay tuned. Thanks so much. I'll pass it back to you, Chief.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Lowe. Just going to go now to the results of our second poll. And the question was, how many doses of the COVID-19 vaccine have you taken so far? And very happy to report that 56% of you have taken two doses, 36% of you have taken one dose, and 8% have none. So those are some encouraging numbers for us to see, and hopefully everybody with one dose is scheduled to get their second dose soon, and those other 8% will consider getting the vaccine. We're going to go now to our next caller, which is Veronica. Veronica, please go ahead with your question.
Hi, good evening. Yeah, my call was to ask you. I don't get a shot, as it, a vaccine, as it. When my time is ready, don't they will have enough for everybody? Hello?
Hi, Veronica. Thank you for the question. And I will just pass this over, I believe, to Dr. Lowe. I just had a technical difficulty there, but I believe this is a Dr. Lowe question. My apologies.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Veronica. I think your question pertains to the vaccine supply. So it really is, about continuing to take whatever vaccines are available. I also see from the Q&A queue that the question apparently pertains to your father has allergies and whether he can take a vaccine. People with just things like seasonal allergies or mild allergies are able to access the vaccine. Obviously, if he has a history of anaphylaxis, that's a different story altogether. But either way, he can present at a vaccine clinic. He'll be appropriately assessed based on the nature of his allergies, and hopefully he will be able to be vaccinated pending review. So thanks so much for the question.
Thank you very much, Veronica, for the question. Just a reminder that if you would like to ask questions tonight, please press *3 on your phone at any time, and you'll be able to ask a question. Our next question comes from Wanda. Wanda, please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks, everyone. I just had a question. If somebody was not feeling well, had a COVID test, it was negative, went to the family doctor saying had a ear, nose, and throat infection, are they still okay to get the second dose vaccine because the appointment's in 2 days from now? So would it be okay, or should that appointment be postponed until after the antibiotics are done?
That's a very good question. Thank you very much, Wanda, and I'll pass it back to Dr. Lowe.
Thanks so much, Chief. This is a really good time to remind, and thank you, Wanda, for the question. Really good time to remind that if you are sick, really, we do ask you to continue self-isolating. Depending on when you got tested, it may have been too early, it may have been whatever the case might be. So we really do encourage you, of course, to self-isolate if you have symptoms at this point in time, recognizing that it could still be COVID-19, and then making sure, of course, that once you get better, that you go and seek vaccination without delay. I hope that's helpful. Thanks. Pass it back to you, Chief.
Okay, thank you, Wanda, for the question. Dr. Lowe, for the response. Our next caller is Sandra. Sandra, please go ahead with your question.
Hello. First of all, thank you very much for everything that you've done. We've really appreciated these town hall calls. My question is, if we've been fully vaccinated and we're exposed to someone with COVID, do we still have to self-isolate or stay home for the 14 days?
Okay, thank you, Sandra, for the great question. I'll pass this over to Dr. Lowe.
Yeah, thanks so much for the question. At this point in time, I believe Public Health Ontario has updated the guidance to indicate that if we are doing case management and contact tracing, and it is determined that you have received two valid doses, that you do not need to self-isolate. Again, all of this will be dependent. So if you have been exposed to someone with COVID, you should at least await the call from public health so that you are appropriately assessed to ensure that this is done. But the Public Health Ontario guidance says, at least in terms of the interim guidance the interim guidance for fully vaccinated individuals indicates that individuals who are fully immunized are exempt from isolation. I think it's a matter of waiting for that call from public health, confirming that with them, and then you will be exempt. Or, of course, calling our info line just to confirm that as well, 905-799-7700. That call center is able to answer your specific questions as well, should you have them. Thanks. Back to you, Chief.
Okay, thank you very much, Sandra and Dr. Lowe. Our next question comes from Kalima. Kalima, if you're there, please go ahead with your question.
Yes, my question is, my household is fully vaccinated, and can we take vacation now outside Canada without quarantining both ways by showing our cert? A receipt?
Well, thank you, Kalima, for the question. And I'm sure Dr. Lowe could speak a little bit about what happens on return to Canada. I'm not sure. I think it depends on the destination you're going to. But Dr. Lowe, maybe you could touch on if you know the federal regulations and rules with respect to quarantining from travel.
Yeah. So thanks, Chief Boys. There's two pieces here. First of all, it's not related to destination, it's related to vaccination status. So if you're a Canadian citizen or permanent resident returning from abroad and you're fully immunized, you need to undergo a test upon arrival, and then you are exempt from the hotel quarantine. You do still need, I believe, this is federal jurisdiction, so I'd have to double check it. I encourage you to check with the federal website just to cross-reference. I think you do still need to isolate. I may be mistaken on that at home, but you don't need to do the hotel quarantine. You do need to do a test. And then the other thing that I would share is in respect of vacationing outside of Canada, there is still a recommendation from the federal government to avoid non-essential travel outside of Canada, to limit it to essential travel only, with the recognition that many countries around the world are still fighting off COVID-19, at this time. But there is a really great website that I just managed to pull up on my computer, which states that, basically you are exempt from quarantine, hotel stopover, and a day 8 testing requirement, but you must meet the other entry requirements, including entering information on your vaccination status and having testing. There's a whole website that's available, so I encourage you to Google COVID-19 vaccinated travelers entering Canada, and you will get to the website that you need to read for any information should you decide to take that vacation.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe, for the quick research there, and Kalima for the question. We're going to go now to our third and final poll of the evening, and the third question tonight is, do you support indoor gyms and recreation facilities being reopened? Press 1 for yes and press 2 for no. Again, the question, do you support indoor gyms and city recreation facilities being reopened? Press 1 for yes. That's 2 for no. And we'll come back to those results in a few moments. We do have approximately 20 minutes left tonight. If you would like to ask a question of any of the people on the line this evening, please press *3 at any time. And we're going to go now to our next caller, which is Liz. Liz, if you're there, please go ahead.
Yes, good evening, and thank you for hosting the town hall. My question is about the reopening process, specifically around the opening of outdoor pools. Although we've had a three-step provincial reopening process given, would the region of Peel and or the city of Brampton hold back on moving to a specific reopening step if Brampton's numbers of the variant are still high, identifying us as a Delta hotspot?
Okay, thank you very much, Liz, for the question, and I'll pass that over to Dr. Lowe. Dr. Lowe?
Yeah, thanks so much, Liz. At this point in time, I don't believe that being a Delta area of concern impacts the provincial reopening plan. And there is also, as I understand it, no plan to reopen phases by region at this point in time. We know that that was a significant issue with the previous framework, where different regions were kept in different categories to some extent. That other regions had looser restrictions outside of Peel was what kept Peel in lockdown, closure, and curtailment for as long as we had, because we were actually seeing exposures occur in other regions, particularly in restaurants and gyms, et cetera, you know, family gatherings, and then subsequently those individuals, because they were Peel residents, were adding to our numbers and also increasing our risk of transmission in our community. So at this time, we understand that it is meant to be an all-of-province approach with the reopening, no plans for a regional approach in the reopening, which means that the fact that we're a Delta hotspot really speaks to the allocation of vaccines to ensure that we get ahead of the Delta variant. Thanks so much. I'll pass it back to the Chief.
And Chief Boys, it's Mayor Brown here. I'll just add to that. I would certainly voice my displeasure directly to the Premier and the Provincial Health Table if there was any notion that it would be a regional reopening. I think we've learned from past mistakes that you can't split up and divvy up the GTA. We're just too interconnected. If you open up restaurants in Vaughan, people will simply go to those restaurants. If you open up hair salons in Markham, but they're closed in Scarborough, people will go to Markham. We've learned from the cell phone data that people are highly mobile and they will move to the open areas. And so I think the fact the province has said they're going to have a province-wide approach is the right approach. And it looks like we have hit their targets. And so I'm anticipating good news in the near future for a faster reopening that's not going to be regionally based.
Great. Thank you very much, Mayor Brown and Dr. Lowe. We're going to go now to our next question, which comes from Sylvia. Sylvia?
Yes, I'm here. Good evening, everyone. And this question is for Mayor Brown. I'd like to know how many people are allowed for a gathering in the park, if they have to be from the same family, and what if some of these people are not vaccinated, what precaution people that has maybe one vaccine needs to take?
So I think it'd be best to have Paul Morrison from Bylaw, or Representative Bylaw, speak to the current provincial emergency rules for how many people can be in a park, unless Lawrence wants to speak to that from a public health perspective.
Yeah, thanks, Mayor Brown. From a public health perspective, we really encourage everyone to get vaccinated first and foremost. And so certainly that's one thing I'll say there. Second of all, right now I believe, and maybe Paul Morrison can speak to it, I believe the current outdoor gathering limit is 10. And so really it is about 10. And to the extent that we're really encouraging people to still distance and mask when it's with people that are not within your household at this point in time, that's just really a security blanket to make sure we really get out of this acute phase of the pandemic while we're ramping up our second dose coverage. Hopefully we get to, and that will hopefully allow us to get to a point where we won't have to do those things anymore. So thanks so much, and I'll pass it back to the Chief.
Thanks, Dr. Lowe, Mayor Brown. And Paul Morrison, if you're on the line, if you want to add any additional information, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Chief. You know, right now, Sylvia, we are in step one, so it is 10 people, and it is not limited just to one household, so you could have friends over. But as Dr. Lowe says, you know, we still look at social distancing. We still want to make sure that you mask up so people don't get continue to spread. And then when we go to step two, you'll see a larger increase in the number of people allowed. It'll be 25. And then in step three, which will be approximately 21 days after step two, we're looking at unspecified amounts in the park, but the provincial government said it will be much larger groups.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Paul. Appreciate the response. Our next question tonight comes from Karen. Karen, if you're there, please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I am here. Thank you for taking my question. My question is to the panel is, I have my both doses of AZ, and I was wondering, if I'm traveling, would I be recognized in Buffalo with the AZ or anywhere else? And if not, why are we having this AZ vaccine if it's not recognized outside of Canada?
Well, maybe if I can jump in here first. I know there was newspaper articles about a concert venue in New York stating that they weren't going to allow people in who had AZ. I understand that has now been amended. They were following their local U.S. Approval process, not the global one for approved vaccines. And so my sense is that right now this is all in flux and countries are coming up with protocols. But I imagine that any of the approved vaccines in Canada will be adequate to for travel when that emerges. And a good example of the success of AstraZeneca is you just look at the UK, where that was the predominant vaccine used. But we're in the initial stages of how vaccine passports are going to work. But I would be confident if you have two AstraZeneca vaccines that those protocols will be adapted and that your vaccines will meet that threshold. But once again, we're just making educated assessments right now, and I'm sure Dr. Lowe would have a better one than mine.
Thanks, Mayor Brown. Thanks, Chief. And thanks for the question. I think it's really important to highlight a few things here. First of all, different countries have used all kinds of different regimens at this point in time. AstraZeneca, fortunately, has been actually 70% of the doses delivered in the UK. So if they want to block out the Britons and the and Canadians for the rest of Kingdom Come or whatever the case might be, then that's going to be on them, I think, in America. And I doubt they would do that. I think they would really be looking at more broadly how the vaccine rollout has gone across the world, and then adapting their policy appropriately. I think the other thing that I would add is, as I mentioned, Kingdom Come. The reality is the vaccines that we've gotten, these are not a forever thing. We're not getting married to these vaccines. There are going to be boosters. The virus is going to change. There's going to be new variants. So we're going to need to have different products, et cetera. So the policies are also going to adapt in the future. So I want to really say this because you got AZ and you got two doses of AZ. Thank you, because you have excellent protection now against severe illness and mortality. You can now, once we get to a place where there is guidance from our federal counterparts around fully vaccinated individuals, know that you have two valid doses on board and know that you've done your part in helping to reduce this, and also helped us out in a time of significant vaccine scarcity at the height of a third wave. So everyone who has taken AZ, you've done the right thing. You've protected yourself. You've protected your community. And I'm certain that future policies will be adapted to recognize that. Thanks. I'll pass it back to you, Chief.
Great. Thank you, Mayor and Dr. Lowe. Our next question comes from Scott. Scott, if you're there, please go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing?
Great, thank you. Please go ahead, Scott.
Hey, this is more of a national question. My question is, why is it that, countries such as Canada not developing their own vaccines in their own backyard, of course, having their own facilities to do that, why wouldn't that be the case, or why isn't that happening? Or are you able to answer that question?
Well, thank you, Scott. I think that's a great question, and I know the mayor and both our doctors maybe could weigh in, and I'll turn it over to them to respond.
Chief, I'm happy to offer. Scott, certainly, as I understand it, we are actually in the process of developing that capacity. And the federal government announced funding for, I believe, facilities in Montreal as well as in Mississauga to produce certain COVID-19 vaccines, which are meant to be up and running in the fall and winter. Certainly our lack of domestic production capacity led to some of the supply challenges that we've had and continue to have throughout the rollout of our vaccination program. But my understanding from our federal counterparts is that domestic capacity is being developed and being brought online for later on this year. Thanks. I'll pass it back to the chief.
Actually, if I could just add.
Yeah, please, Dr. Martino first.
And I think this was announced several months ago, and I think the partnership was with Novavax. My assumption is that, as Lawrence said, that'll take place in the latter part of this year and into 2022. Traditionally, Canada did have a significant vaccination capacity through Connaught Laboratories many years ago. That certainly was shut down and moved overseas. But what still exists in Canada is the expertise, the immunologists, and the technologists that can move this agenda forward. So I have great faith in our domestic ability to fend off this pandemic and any future pandemic. I think we're starting to recognize that we need to be more self-sufficient, whether it's with regards to PPE, vaccinations and medications to treat pathogens like this one and others, I'm sure, that will threaten us in the future. So I think maybe more than anything, this is a wake-up call, but I do believe that both our federal and provincial government are working on strategies to make us prepared.
It's Mayor Brown here. I don't think I could have put it more eloquently than Dr. Martino did, but I agree that it's a wake-up call, and I think lessons have been learned by the Canadian government that you need to have domestic supply chains. And it's heartening to see both the province of Ontario and the government of Canada invest robustly in, you know, creating our own production for vaccine capacity and also PPE and you know, even in Brampton, you look at how some of the companies have adapted. You know, the fact that O2 Medical is now making ventilators for around the country, and so I think you're going to see more of that. I think this pandemic has taught us that this could happen, and you have to have domestic supply chains that are reliable, because in a scarcity like we've seen during this pandemic, people will put walls up. And, you know, in the U.S., there was a U.S. first approach. In the EU, there was an EU-focused first approach. And I think the lesson that everyone's learned is that there's going to be a focus on making sure that Canada can sustain its own needs in the future. So thank you for asking that question. And I certainly feel, speaking to both the Prime Minister and the Premier, that they've learned that lesson.
Thank you for the team response, Mayor Brown, and both of our doctors. We do have time for a couple more questions, and I just want to follow up with the results of the third and final poll of the evening. The question was, do you support indoor gyms and city recreation facilities being reopened? 57% of you said no, with 43% of you saying yes. Thank you very much for all your responses. We do appreciate you taking the time to help provide us that information. We're going to go now to our next caller, which is Athena. Athena, please go ahead.
Hi, my question is, with mine and my medications, it says that I can't take a live vaccine. Are any of them with live agents or vaccine?
Thank you, Athena, and I will turn it over to Dr. Lowe, and if Dr. Martino needs to weigh in, he's there as well. Thank you.
So thanks so much, Chief and Athena, for the question. The only live vaccine that is currently approved for use in Canada is the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, which is used. It's a weakened version of a common cold virus that's been modified to contain the genetic material shared by the coronavirus. So basically, that is a live vaccine. But the two vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, the mRNA vaccines, those are not live vaccines and therefore would not be contraindicated with the medication that you described. Thanks, and I'll pass it back to you, Chief.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Lowe, and thank you, Athena, for the question. Our next caller is Len. Len, if you're there, please go ahead with your question. Thank you.
Hi, this is Len, and my question is, when will the Pfizer vaccine be available at Brampton Civic Hospital? We were scheduled for ours, but we didn't want to go into having two different vaccines. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Len, for the question. And Dr. Martino, maybe you could weigh in on that.
Yeah, and thank you for your question, Len. We have had to switch to
a supply of Moderna vaccine because of a delay in shipment of the Pfizer vaccine. And we've limited our reserve of Pfizer vaccine for our youth clinic because the Moderna vaccine has not been sanctioned for the youth, those over age 12 and under 18. We expect shipments in the coming week. Shipments to be able to provide the Pfizer vaccine. And so stay tuned. You may want to call our number and I'm just looking here. I don't have it right at hand. Here we are. 905-494-6685 between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. 7 days a week to get more information, or you can go online and that will be made available as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I could, Chief and Dr. Lowe, I'm just going to chime in really quickly to just reiterate, though, the message I said in my initial outset. I certainly recognize a lot of people may have a preference to try to not mix doses. You know, I think our recommendation still stands. You know, Pfizer and Moderna are, you know, biosimilar. They're essentially the same mechanism, side effects. So I really just wanted to encourage everyone on the call, if you're listening, the recommendation is that mRNA is mRNA. And if there is an opportunity and you, if you are able to get a vaccine sooner, I really encourage you not to delay or cancel appointments just to wait for Pfizer. We've seen especially that the supply chain is quite volatile, and especially with Pfizer delayed this week and shipments of Pfizer being cut in half in July, you could be waiting quite a bit longer, especially considering that Pfizer at this point is our only product approved for 12 to 17 as well, and it's being reserved for that age group as well. So just really wanted to add to that, Len, just in case that helps alleviate some of your concerns about mixing, and really encouraging you to just get the two valid doses as quickly as possible. Thanks. I'll pass it back to you, Chief.
Yeah, and if I can just reiterate, and I'd like to provide you an analogy, Len. The Life brand acetaminophen works just as well as the brand name Tylenol for my headache and from the headache of most of my patients, if not all. And the same generic blood pressure medication that I'm sure many of those on the line are taking works just as well as the brand name. And the same can be said for the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine. But I think the most important point here is the best vaccine is the one you can get right away. And so if that means keeping your appointment, absolutely. That's what you need to do.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Lowe and Martino. Ladies and gentlemen, that is all the time we have for this evening. We do want to thank you for joining us. A huge thank you to Dr. Lowe and Dr. Martino, who take valuable time out of their day to respond to these questions tonight. We really do appreciate, and all our mayor and councillors that are on the line, and the 6,600-plus callers that joined us tonight, thank you very much. Please stay safe, get vaccinated, and there are definitely bright times ahead. Thank you and have a good evening, and we'll see you in a few weeks at our next town hall. Take care. Good night.
Take care. Good night.